11-day spiritual retreat, lecture number 3, July 1st. My inner word is always changing in charming ways. My inner word is always changing in charming ways. How about that? How can our inner word be always changing in charming ways? When, in the words of John in the Bible, he said, "And the Word was with God, and the Word was God." That's a good observation, isn't it? So the Word in us is God, and the Word is only God. The Word in us is all, and the Word in us is only all. Now, what sort of thoughts do we have going through our mind? We say, my inner word is always changing in charming ways. What sort of word do we have going through our inner self? What sort of ideas do we have going through our inner self? What sort of thoughts do we have going through our inner self? Think about it. Do you have thoughts going through your inner self that say to you that you are a beautiful being? Do you have thoughts going through your inner self saying that you are divine? Do you have thoughts going through your inner being saying that you are the ultimate of the ultimate? Whatever that means. Or do you have thoughts going through your inner self that say to you, you are in any way limited? If you have any thoughts like that, those are thoughts of yesterday. Those are thoughts of your previous life, if you will. Your previous what do we call it? When you have a different level of consciousness?
A dimension.
A different dimension? Isn't that an interesting word, dimension? Now, what is the dimension of this table? This table is pi r squared, you know. So you take the radius or the diameter, but take the radius times pi, and you square that, and then you have the dimension of the table. You have the volume of the table. Now, that's sort of an irrational thing to say, because who says what pi is, and what r squared is, and the radius squared, and things like that? Who says that that's all is? Well, now, we, inside of us, don't judge anything. We, inside of us, accept everything as it is. And so we inside of us start thinking that our inner word is whatever it is. Now, is our inner word peace? Is our inner word love? Is our inner word wholeness? Is our inner word allness? What is our inner word? And we can start thinking about them in most charming ways. Now, I have the Mr. Candle story that I delight in telling. And these are little stories, little vignettes about children who are interacting with one another and how these children live together in a harmonious world and how they live together in a world where they have done some magical thing of putting the cause in motion for their highest and their best. And this is quite wonderful. This is quite wonderful. But how do I come up with these stories? How do I come up with these ideas about these children or the Mr. Candle that he's going around the world talking to children in their bedtime at the times they're ready to go to bed and telling them beautiful thoughts for their mind to think about? How do these ideas come up? Where do they come from? Well, they come from the one source. You could say them just as easily as I can say them. You could live them just as easily as I can live them. But as of the moment, you would rather pay attention to the itty-bitty workaday activities of your life and forget that this is an inner world and not an outer world. You say, but we got to do these different things, do we? Sylvia, what have they told us about mice and rats? If we feed them what?
sparingly.
Thank you, Sylvia. Oh, thank you, Sylvia. You are so, shut up. You are so wonderful. You are so wonderful, Sylvia. I thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you, Sylvia. I didn't know your name was Sylvia. I think that is the most honorable thing you could ever do, is to take on the name of Sylvia as your own. That's beautiful. That's beautiful. Now, I'll give you each an opportunity to answer questions, but never take the question away from somebody else. Because if you take the question away from somebody else, then they will never have had the opportunity to say what they wanted to say. I say to Ellen, Ellen, what is your daddy's name? And so Sylvia answers. And I say, Ellen, what is your daddy's name? And Sylvia answers. And I say, Ellen, don't you know your daddy's name? And she says, well, now I'm not sure, because I've been hearing so many names, you know. And Ellen, what is your daddy's name?
Max.
Well, Max, yes. You see, her father's name is Herb. You know, her father's name is Patty. Her father's name is Junior. Her father's name is some silliness. What is your father's name, Sybil? What's his first name?
Daniel.
Now, why didn't she say Danny boy? Why didn't she say Dan? Did all of his friends call him Dan? And why didn't she say that? Because his name is Daniel. His name is not Dan or Danny or Dee or something like that. You see, this is important. Now, Ellen, trial two. What is your daddy's name?
Maximilian.
Maximilian. Now, that strikes like a lot of power and a lot of imagination and a lot of goodness to it. Yeah. Now, Sylvia, did you know that her father's name, her father's name is Maximilian?
Yes.
How did you know that?
Well, I heard it.
When? Just
long
now.
A long time ago.
Oh, a long time ago. I see. Well, would you have told me her father's name if I asked her what her father's name was?
No.
No. Why not?
Because you asked her.
Because it's her question. And each one of you has an opportunity to do these things. What's your father's name, Ingeborg? Does your father have a first name?
Oh, yeah. His first name is Walter.
Walter, with a V for Walter, like Walter Heinz.
Mm-hmm.
Ortley. Walter Ortley. Okay. Walter in English and Walter in German. Okay. Now, what kind of a man did that represent in your father?
He was eager to work.
I'm sorry?
He was eager to work.
He was eager to work.
He also was eager to delight in company and be generous with the company. But the end was...
He was social. He was a social man, huh? Okay. Now, was there ever an end to your father?
No.
Is your father still a super fantastic being?
Yes.
Is he alive or dead? It doesn't matter. Is your father a super fantastic being?
Yes.
Why? He is that in your consciousness. He is that in your mind. He is that in your word. And you see, with your word, you can have things happen in many charming ways. Now, would you say that your father was a man who liked company?
Yes.
Yes. Would you say your father liked to dance?
Also.
Also. Would you say that your father liked to dance with any lady that he could get to go up on the dance floor and dance with?
No.
He wanted to dance with mother, huh? Was mother a good dancer? Hmm. Yeah. And, why didn't your father dance with your mother more often?
They decided to go separate ways.
This is before they went their separate ways. What they did after they went their separate ways, who knows, you know. But obviously he's not going to be dancing with her after they went their separate ways. Now, how did he dance with her before they went their separate ways?
They were united. They loved it.
They baronized it?
They're united.
Oh, they were united. Ooh, that's interesting. Maybe if your father and mother danced more often, they would never have separated, huh? Now, what's the charming thing about your mother and your father? And I will tell you. The charming thing about your mother and your father is that they danced together and they loved dancing. They danced together and they loved dancing. They danced together and they loved dancing. Now, how much, how often, how recently, if at all, have you thought about that? Not at all. Not at all. If that was a few years ago, you hadn't even thought about it then. You only thought about it because we brought it up right now. Now, you can have my inner word is always changing in charming ways. Your inner attitude about your mom and your dad is now seeing this lady and this man dancing together and having a wonderful time and enjoying each other's company. Did they dance at home or did they go out to parties?
They had to go out.
They didn't have to go out. They went out to parties. All right, now, you don't know about it. What do you mean shake your head? No, you don't know anything because I haven't told you yet, my thought. Okay, now, your mother and your father love to dance naked in their bedroom. And, oh, you say like that, you know, they love to dance naked in their bedroom, and they would do all sorts of beautiful dances together, and they just had a great time, and they told you, kid, to stay out of the bedroom, that they are, you know, having their time together. Now, were they doing things sexual? Doesn't matter. Were they doing things naughty? Doesn't matter. Were they doing things nice? Doesn't matter. Were they dancing naked in the bedroom? Shit, that's an interesting idea. Now, if you were to think of them doing that, you'd say, wow, my mom and my dad naked together? My goodness sakes, you know, how really unusual. And then you say to yourself, all right, now, my dad used to come up to my mom while she was making breakfast or while she was fixing the food, and he used to take his finger and he would tickle her under the ribs. And she'd say, oh, Walter, why, Walter, don't you know better? I'm cooking now. And then he'd reach around and he'd kiss her on the neck. And she'd say, stop it, stop it, stop it. I won't be able to cook at all if you keep doing that. You know? Yeah. And so you're sitting at the table thinking that they're angry at each other, thinking that they are unhappy with each other. And actually, they're just in great delight in each other. Now, is this not a lovely remembrance? Is this not something that you would like to put into motion for yourself in a charming way to have the memory of your mother and your father in your life as two beautiful beings? Isn't that kind of nice? Now, can you imagine Ellen doing this in her charming way with her parents, with her mother being such a prideful, proper type woman, and with Maximilian, the great Maximilian, coming in and say, woman, I'm here. And she turns and throws her lips toward him and says, planet here, sweetheart. And Ellen says, my God, I never noticed that. Well, you're too low. You were too dear to God. You didn't see that, you know? And they loved each other, didn't they?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes. Well, do you think they had little endearments with one another? Do you think they had little things they did with one another that made each other very happy?
To fortify their marriage.
I don't think it was to fortify their marriage. I think they were just horny, that's all.
What does that mean?
Horny means sexy.
Okay.
Your mother and father loved each other.
Yes.
They had children, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And they also loved the foreplay and the afterplay of their marriage, and they didn't have to always end up with sex. You understand?
Right.
All right. Did your father ever come in and do an enduring thing to your mother? Did he ever come and kiss her on the neck?
Something nice. Oh, yes.
My goodness. And you don't know what enduring means, huh? Okay. Yeah, that's great. Now, what did he do that was so wonderful to your mother? Did he kiss her on the neck? Did he bring her flowers? Stroking her hair, While she was cooking or while she was what?
While she's setting the table.
Well, she said, well, he certainly was a pain in the neck, wasn't he?
No, because when he came home a little later, she set the table for him and put the food well prepared by herself.
In other words, she waited her meal to be with him.
Yes.
And that's quite lovely. Now, what I'm saying to you is, can you reconstruct your world with the way that you can see that it is most beautiful?
Yeah.
Now, Walter and what's your mom's name?
Irma.
Walter and Irmy, do you think that they had a good time together? Do you think they loved each other, that they had a good relationship? If you remember that one thing where they separated, then you're silly. Because that's only one thing out of their entire marriage. It's only one thing. It might be the worst or the best or whatever thing, but it's only one thing. Remember all those other things. And I don't mean that you should remember them. All I mean is every word that you speak should be a word of uplifting, a word of magic, a word of charm, which makes your environment and makes your life an exciting adventure. Because if you don't do that, you're going to live in hell. Because until you join me 100%, and you haven't done that yet, but until you join me 100%, you're still being human. And in being human, you're still protesting. And, Sylvia, what did we say about protesting?
If you protest your limitations, they are yours.
If you protest your limitations, they are yours. So if you protest the separation of your mom and dad, then it's still yours. Let it go. Let it go. It's like the monk who carried the lady across the creek, you know, and the other monk said, my God, you carried that woman across the creek an hour ago. How come you carried her across? That's what, not what we do. He said, I set her down, but you're still carrying her, you know. Now, you see, in your thoughts, in your mind, are you still carrying all of this baggage that is not beneficial to you? Let it go. Let it go. Now, Sybil, her life has been a challenge, and she has always been the winner because Sybil has always been herself. Sybil always said, I like me, I'm doing my things my way, and I'm a happy person, and this is good. We should all do this to a degree, but not in protest. If we do it because we don't want something, then we're in trouble. I tell people always, do not break up a marriage and run away from something. If you're going to break up a marriage, run to something. Have something to run to, but don't run away from something. If you don't like your job, don't run away from it. Run to something. If you don't like yourself, don't run away from yourself. Run to something. You know, find something in yourself that is wonderful and good. Okay, now, with Sybil. Sybil can have these words in herself be having a most charming effect, a most unique and delightful effect. Sybil looks at her house, or first let's say Sybil looks at herself, and she sees herself as a magnificent woman, okay? Is that hard?
Yes.
No, that's not hard, is it?
That's not hard.
That's not hard, okay. Sybil looks at herself as a magnificent woman. Okay, then Sybil thought, everybody's saying, Sybil, when are you going to get married? Sybil, when are you going to get married? Sybil, when are you going to get married? And so then she decides, well, maybe I should get married. So she gets married for the wrong reason. She gets married because everybody thinks she should get married. And so when she's married, she decides, hey, I don't want to have a marriage like everybody else has. I want to have a marriage where I am myself and I enjoy myself. And so she creates that. And then she creates her husband, totally harmonious with that. Totally harmonious with that. And then she creates her children, an exact replica of herself. Totally harmonious with her own independent spirit. And then she goes out and she says, okay, now I've raised the family, I've done this and I've done that. I didn't have to. I could have stepped aside at any time. Many women do. They're raising families and they become the CEO of great businesses, you know. Many times people are just newlyweds and the wife says, sweetheart, I didn't tell you something before we got married, but you know, I have a problem. He says, oh, you got a problem? What's that? Well, I have the need to get out and be a professional woman. What? You want to be a whore? No. I want to be a professional woman. I want to work in the business field, in the business world. Oh, okay. You know, he thought something different. And so she says, I want to be able to develop myself in a business world where I am I can use my talents to the highest and best. And he thinks, oh, cool. You know, I can only do so much, so you're not going to do any better than I can do. Because he can't visualize her different from himself, you know. But she visualizes herself different from herself. She has some charming ideas about what she's going to do. She has some charming ways that she's going to develop herself. And so Sybil starts a program within herself, which she started a long time ago, but now she's directing it to her personal life, her professional life, and she is saying, I'm number one. She is saying, I am fantastic. She is saying, I'm the creator of my world. She is saying, everything in and everybody in my world I have created. Now, I create myself with my perfect job. I create myself with my perfect position. I create myself using my talents in the most beautiful way. And I create myself having a 3-hour work day. And I work from my home, you know? And so she has a 3-hour work day. And now, how could she work from her home, have a 3-hour work day, and have a fantastic operation going on? Well, again, let's just play with Bill Gates for a minute. Bill Gates has this tremendous organization, and he's on top of most of it. And yet, he has a second, he has probably more than two, but he has a second organization in which his wife is giving away money. And they want to give it away most properly and beneficially, so he's got to have his nose in there too. And he's got so many beautiful ideas of how he could give away money to organizations and people who would benefit from it. And so he's doing these two things. Now, while he's working on his job in his business office at Microsoft, he's very, very busy. Very busy with all sorts of things. But somebody brings up an idea and says something about, wouldn't it be wonderful if we had a gadget in this world that would be able to have the entire knowledge of the universe on it in just one little chip? Wouldn't it be wonderful to have just one little chip that had, and then that's not the problem. The chip can be. How do you assemble all the knowledge onto that chip? See, how do you put all the knowledge in the universe onto that chip? And you see, now that takes the genius idea. That takes the genius idea. And so Bill sits back and he says, Ah, yes. The way to have all knowledge is to connect the chip to the universal mind. Ah! How do you connect the chip to the universal mind? Well, study the brain and how it connects to the universal mind, but make the chip be a open circuit to the universal mind, and you plug that into your consciousness, and you have the universal mind at your beck and call whenever you choose. Well, how do you put a control on it? That's what you don't want to do. Never put a control on the universal mind. Never put a control on all the knowledge of the universe. Take what you want. Use what you like. Tune in to what is interesting to you. And so Bill Gates is coming up with these ideas, and then his staff is saying, Bill, where are you? You know, where are you? He says, oh, I was just thinking of these ideas. And you see, when our mind is tuned in to our brilliance, we can do in 3 hours what it takes a century for other people to even consider doing. But we do it in charming ways. Now, how do you do it? How do you consider what you want to do? We have our topic, My Inner Word is Always Changing in Charming Ways. My Inner Word is Always Changing in Charming Ways. Now, Ingeborg's inner word was that her parents had separated. Now, we're changing Ingeborg's inner word to that her parents love to dance together. Her parents love to have sex together. Her parents love to have parties together and have friends over. Her parents love to go swimming. Yeah, who knows what else. I don't want to say anything that Ingeborg would disagree with, because then right away she'd be fighting me. And what do we say?
If you fight for your limitation or anything, it's yours.
When you fight, that's not what we said.
If you protest
your limitations, then they are yours. And that we use the word fight, but if you protest. So anytime we protest anything, it's our limitation. Now, we say, you can't do that. That's not nice. I don't want you to hurt that person. Stop that. Stop that. That's protesting. Well, you're not helping anything. You go over and you say, hey, hit me. I'm a much better target than that person. What's the matter? Are you crazy? No, why hit that person? Because they're just an innocent little lamb. Just hit me, you know. And the person says, you're crazy. You're Farouk, you know. And you say, no, I just think that I can handle being hit better than that person can handle being hit. And the guy says, and he can't hit you. He can't hit you. He can't. Because you're not protesting. You're not protesting anything. You're offering it. If they want your coat, give them your cloak, as the saying went. You know? Turn the other cheek. Pow, pow. Well, they'll never hit the second cheek. They hit the first cheek by mistake, you know? Really. Nobody ever wants to hurt themselves. And anytime you hurt anybody else, you're hurting yourself. Now, Ingeborg is going to now have a new relationship with her mom and dad. She's going to now be dancing with them. Her dad's going to teach her how to dance. Did your dad ever teach you how to dance? But he's going to teach you how now. Now, when you go in your meditation, or sleep, or whatever you're doing, go and say, okay, Dad, I'm ready for my first dancing lesson. And then you go back into your consciousness, and you're recreating your world in a positive, dynamic way, and charming ways that are most desirable for you. Now, Sybil, she created a whole lifetime of experiences. And everybody is fantastic. Every one of her children are geniuses. Her husband's a genius. Her world's a genius. And she says to her husband, sweetheart, I'm going to be gone for about 3 or 4 years. You take over and do what you want here. And when I come back, we'll have a great time too. And Sam says, okay, love, be my guest, you know. And then when she comes back, they're together for a while. And Sam says, I think I'll take off for a little while. And Seville says, go for it, enjoy. And so he takes off, and he enjoys it, and he comes back, or he doesn't come back, or whatever. But you see, they're both free. They're both free. They do not live their life based upon the other. They do not live their life dependent upon the other. They live their life as unique, free beings, like my mother. She wanted to study her religion, and she took her time every day. From noon to 3 o'clock to study her Rosicrucian, Unity, Religious Science, all the things that she studied. And she became very knowledgeable and very well understood. And she had a lovely little study. It was in the back of the house, and she'd go in there and close the door. I am not to be bothered. Nobody, no matter if you're dying, you sit outside the door and wait. At 3 o'clock, I'll come take care of you. Up until that time, I'm not available. And we didn't dare scream or holler or be unhappy with each other outside of her door until 3 o'clock. Then we put up a ruckus. And she said, now what's the problem? Well, when did that happen? An hour ago, 2 hours ago. Well, don't you think that you're okay now? Yeah, you see. But Mother did her thing. She did her thing. She told my dad, she says, you push me too hard and I'll leave the kids and you and I'll... go and do my thing. He says, no, don't do that, you know. But you see, this is what we want to do. We want to have our words spoken in charming ways. Now, do you think that my father and mother's marriage was stronger after my mother's decision?
Sure.
Because my dad realized he couldn't push her around. My mother realized she couldn't be pushed around. She had to come to that realization too, you know. And when she did, she began living her life in most charming ways. She began saying, Herb, I'm doing this for you. And he said, but I don't want it. And she said, I don't care. I'm doing this for you, and if you don't want it, you don't have to take it. But I'm doing it for you. He had an ulcer, and so she had all these grinders and grinding of food and stuff for him, making nice things for him. And then finally, he got, you know, accustomed to it, and he got to like it. And so before you knew it, Mother and Dad were doing great things together, whereas before they had always been at odds with each other because she wanted to do her thing and he did his thing, you know. So think about this now. Think about this. My inner word is always changing in charming ways. My inner word is always changing in charming ways. My inner word. Now you say, Herb, how could you have had all the experiences that you tell us you had? And I say, you are silly. You are so silly. I don't even tell you a third of my experiences. And you say, how could I have all of those experiences in my life? Hey, today you're sitting here listening to this thought. And at noon, you're going to be eating a meal. And maybe at the meal, in comes Queen Elizabeth. And you say, well, my lady, how wonderful. Please come join us for lunch. And she say, thank you, I'd like that. Her entourage stays outside because we didn't have room for them inside. And so she comes in. And so you say, my God, the Queen of England was at my lunch table. And she ate with us just like a normal people would eat. You know? And wow, would you believe that? No, I wouldn't. So somebody else, even though that highlight came into your life, would not believe it. And does it matter to you? Did you know it happened? Did it happen, Ellen?
Yes.
So you don't have to prove it to anybody. So, Ingeborg, your mama and your dad danced their hearts out. They jitterbugged away like crazy kids, you know that? They were just really dancing fools. And you didn't even know about halftime because they weren't around to show you. Yeah, they left grandma to take care of you. So they just had a ball for themselves. Now, you see, we don't know what's all going on in our world, you know. You don't know, but Mussolini probably came and visited your home when you were there, you know. You were living in Italy, and you had the post office civil service there? No?
Germany.
The post office service was in Germany? Okay, Hitler. He came to visit you in your post office. He had to mail something to Eva Braun, you know, to tell her that he loved her, you know. And so he said, what was your mama's last name?
Herman.
Herman. Miss Herman, will this get to Eva okay? And your mama says, Hitler? He didn't say,
what?
No, not all.
That's
it. No, not Heil, but Herr. Hitler.
Herr Führer.
Herr Führer. Okay, whatever the proper words are. Herr Führer. I will personally deliver it myself. Because you are a big man here in Germany. And he says, Frau...
Hermann.
Hermann? Frau Hermann, you are a woman among women. I will make you in charge of my women's corps. And so Frau Hermann says, Herr Hitler, that's very lovely of you, but I would rather just remain in the background and just be with my family. And Herr Hitler says, Frau Hermann, I understand totally. My mother was the same way when I offered her an opportunity to be something in my program. And she says, you just play your games, Sonny, and I will play mine. And now, can you imagine what would happen to your mother's consciousness and your mother's attitude if Herr Hitler had come to her and said that at a time that he was high on the hog? Can you imagine? And did it happen? Yes. Maybe not. Maybe yes. And did she deliver the letter to Fräulein Braun, you know? And she did. And what did Fräulein Braun say?
Thank you.
She says, you have come a long way. Let me let my chauffeur take you back rather than you taking the bus. And so her chauffeur took him back, her back. And on the way, she told the chauffeur to stop at the grocery store, and at the Hitler's personal grocery store, and buy her all of the food and things that she wanted. Now, can you see the charming ways in which you can recreate history, recreate your past, and it's not doing something wrong? Now, could that have happened? Sure, it could have happened. And was Hitler an ordinary man? Did he have ordinary needs? Did he stop off at the post office when he wanted to and do did he want his staff to always do it? No. He wanted to have that personally go into the hands of the post office and go to his sweetheart, you know. And you see, these are things that we can create and understand and know. Mm-hmm. Now, how has your marriage been throughout your life? And Seville would say, why, perfect, of course. I created every moment of it. Every moment was heaven. Every moment was peace. Every moment was accomplishing exactly what I had in mind. I respected myself, and my family absolutely respected me. My sons think that I'm the greatest mother in the world, and they would do anything for me, and they think that anything I do is wonderful. My sons think anything I do is wonderful. See, now you're putting that cause in motion. Do your sons really think anything you're doing is wonderful? There's a little hedge in there, but that is a hedge you're going to kick out. Now your sons think that your style of religion, your style of philosophy, your style of living is fantastic, you know. You look at your sons and you say, your style of living is just a little different from me too. But you see, your son's style of living is an exact reflection of yours. And they have a perfect style of living, don't they? Yes. You see, we have to stop smiling when we think about other things and other attitudes, because if we don't, then we empower those things. Now, I have used this term, and I don't think any of you understand it, but I'll use it many, many more times. Dream the impossible dream. La da 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 da. I say, dream your wildest dream. Take your wildest dream, that impossible dream. Don't say impossible. Impossible means you can't do it, basically. But dream your wildest dream. Wouldn't that be better? You know? Your wildest dream, your craziest dream, your most wonderful, fantastic dream, you know? Where, what do most people do? You say, you're rich. And so what do? You think of the movie where you open up this vault and here are all the diamonds and jewels and gold and tons of it just waiting for you. And there's no snakes in front of the way to get in to keep you from going there. And then you load up with it and you're trying to come out of there with all that you can carry. Hey, don't do that. Don't do that. That means limitation. What you do, this is yours now. This is yours. And now, you created it in your life. Okay, now, where do you want to live? You want to live in that same old house you had? Or you want to live in some lovely place that comes to mind? Okay, then have a room in that lovely place that has a vault for all of your wealth. Just have a special room. Now, have you ever watched Donald Duck? On television. He is a cartoon character of Walt Disney, and he has an uncle, and his uncle Scrooge Duck. And Uncle Scrooge Duck is extremely wealthy, extremely wealthy. And Uncle Scrooge Duck has a big hill, and on top of the hill he has a big castle, not a castle, but a big vault. And in that vault is all the money, all the gold, all the stuff you could ever want. And so Donald Duck, he comes to visit his uncle occasionally, and he goes into that vault, and he dives into this money. And the money just sort of swims around in like liquid gold, you know. But, I mean, Donald Duck can do anything in a cartoon, you know. And you can, too. You can dream your wildest dream. So, visualize, if that is your choice, that all that money is there. Now, Scrooge has problems occasionally. Scrooge gets taken away in an airplane, which crashes someplace, and he has no access to his money. He has no access to his abundance. But he is still rich. He always has his high hat. He always has his symbols of wealth. He always has his attitude of wealth. And with that attitude of wealth, he goes to the different tribal chiefs and what have you, wherever he has landed or crashed his airplane, and he says, "Ooga ba 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 googie ba," and the tribal chief says, "Ooga ba 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 googa," and they speak their language right away, immediately, you know. And then he says to the tribal chief, "I want you to make me an airplane." And the tribal chief says, "What is an airplane?" And he says, "Don't worry, I'll tell you." And he says, "Put the knee bone connected to the leg bone and stuff like that." And they put the airplane together. And then, of course, they have to have some gas. And so naturally, they go over to the swamp, and they get some methane gas that's coming out of the swamp. I mean, Scrooge knows all these things. He's brilliant. That's why he's so rich, you know. And then they put bottles, some of it, and they put it in the airplane, and he flies away. Now, most illogical, most unreasonable, most impossible, but Scrooge is that man. He is the wildest dream man, you know. And he does these things. And Donald is always being blamed for things, which he, of course, does do things. But the thing is, he just has a ball. We should get the series of Donald Ducks and Uncle Scrooge. And so it's a charming, charming thing. And they do the impossible. They do the, and you don't think it's impossible as you're watching it because that's a cartoon. And in cartoons, they can do these things. Well, in life, you can do these things, too. In life, you can do all these things too. It's just a matter of where is your consciousness? Where is your attitude about yourself? Where is your vision of who you are? Ingeborg, she has a mother and father now who love to dance, and who love to dance around naked in their bedroom. Oh, how neat, you know? And they love to go to parties, and they just dearly love each other. Now, that's the way Ingeborg remembers her mother and father. Not that they had a little difficulty. That's gone forever, you know. And Sybil, how does she remember her family and her children and her experiences? That she was always the queen, right? Right. She was always the queen, and she was always saying, "Thank you." And her family would come in and serve her. Her family would come in and set the table as she sat there and meditated before her meal. And they would put the food before her, and the food was always of the most exquisite of fare. It wasn't always a native dish. It was often a native dish because they were familiar with it, but it was specialty foods. It was gourmet foods. It was foods that just delighted the palate in every way. And her sons and her daughter and her husband and her friends, nobody would ever sit at the table until she was seated and everything was served, and then they would all sit because they were the creation of Sybil in her world. They were not her lackeys, not her slaves, not her servants, but they were doing what they chose to do because she chose to have them in her world doing that. That's the only reason that they had to be in her world. Now, Ellen, when she was a little girl, she created herself with a great lust. Ellen created herself with a great lust as she was a little girl. Her dad would bring them chocolate to her and her sister. And Ellen would immediately devour her chocolate and thoroughly enjoy it. But her sister had infinite patience and not a great sweet tooth, and she had put the chocolate on her bedside table and leave it there right in Ellen's vision. And Ellen looked at that chocolate every moment and thought, And I imagine sometimes Ellen would surreptitiously open the wrapper on the chocolate, take the chocolate out and put the wrapper back together, and you wouldn't know the chocolate was missing, you know. But you hadn't tried that? You you tried lots of things that you're not telling us. But the thing is, Ellen always was the boss. Ellen always was the one. Ellen was the apple of her daddy's eye. Ellen was the apple of her mother's eye. Ellen had everybody worshiping her, everybody thinking that she was just the greatest. In fact, when she was in school, she had the loudest voice. And so she was given the privilege of reading the things and doing the things where it meant that everyone had to hear it. Now, Ellen never forgot that. And Ellen, when she watched the communion at some point in her life, she says, that's cool. And so then she got all of her little friends together, and they went in the church, in the sanctuary itself, and she took out the materials, and she served each one of the children with the wine and the bread, and put the wafer on their mouth and so forth. And then the priest came in and says, what are you guys doing, you know, thinking that they were disrespectful. And then he realized they were not disrespectful. He says, come on, come, go. Yes, that's not to play with. But the priest missed the greatest opportunity in the world to teach those children what the sacrament really was if he had really been on the ball. He would have realized that here, these innocent little toddlers who were 6 and 8 years old wanted to know about this, you know, maybe 5 and 6 years old. And he missed the bet. But Ellen didn't miss the bet. Because Ellen is always the creator of her world, and she's always looking out in her world and finding beautiful beings and beautiful circumstances going on in the world. She's a most remarkable person. And how about you? Are you all a most remarkable person too?
Yes.
Is Sylvia a remarkable person?
Oh, yes.
Now, what did Sylvia create her mother and father doing? Sylvia created her mother and father being a most loving couple. They didn't show it outside the bedroom door, but they showed it in the bedroom. Because outside, they were always, too proper, you know. They weren't great huggers and kissers and snuggers.
Yes.
They were kissers?
My dad, when he left our apartment, he always kissed my mom.
Did he kiss all the rest of the kids too?
No.
What was wrong with you?
Well, probably it was a question of time.
Probably dirty face.
Too many kids.
But that's beautiful. I know I tell this about Sibylla Gabua, and not Sibylla, Cielo Arriaga, you know, our Puerto Rican student. And she has two beautiful daughters. They're teenagers. And I would visit in her home, and we would be working on her lessons and so forth. And her daughters would come in and say, hi, Mom. And give her a flying kiss with a hand. And then they'd rush out the door. And then they come in, hi, Mom, we're back. You know, and give her a rush. I said, now stop that. I said, come over here. I said, now, this is how you should give your mother a kiss. So I gave the mother a kiss, you know, a real rich kiss. And then I said, now, each one of you, when you leave the house, you stop and you give your mother a real smooch on the mouth, give her a real hug, and give her a real love. And then when you come back in, say the same thing. None of this highway kisses, you know, catches your goal. You kiss. And so they did that. And from that day on, that was 20 years ago, 25 years ago, 20 years ago at least. From that day, 25 years ago, from that day on, they did that with their mother. Every time they went in and out of the house until they got married and had their own house, and then whenever the mother came to visit them or they went to visit their mother, they did it. You see, in one moment's time, because of my foolishness or my silliness or my sincerity, they changed the style in their life, and they showed the affection to their mother that they wanted to show but had never shown. You see, this is something that we can each do, too. And just like Sylvia's father and mother, they showed kissing affection. But did they show hugging affection? Did they show smooching affection? Did they show these things? And probably more than Sylvia knows. Because Sylvia wasn't always paying attention. Sylvia wasn't always there with her eyes open. Sylvia had her ideas on many different projects and many different plans. But what was the thing that Sylvia liked the most in her family life? Most in Sylvia's family life, she liked being the little mother. And she would go around and be the little mother for all the neighborhood kids in her own family and do things with them and have them do things. But they didn't always appreciate it. Now, we're going to create a new story that everyone in the neighborhood recognized you as Mother Teresa, the younger, and they came to worship at your doorstep. Everyone in the neighborhood recognized you as a very special lady and worshiped. Now, Olga Worrell, remember? She's the Russian lady who had special talents. Well, now, when Olga was a little girl, her mother would send her to the neighbors to lay her hand on the neighbors and say, "You're home perfect." And Olga didn't know what she was doing, but she had a very wonderful gift. And so, as anybody in the neighborhood had a problem, they'd send Olga over just to be in their presence, and the illness would go away and the problem would be solved. And I worked with Olga in her later years and did the same things that she was doing all of her earlier years now. How did Olga have the opportunity to do that? Her mother recognized it but didn't want to overplay it. And so she just sent Olga over ostensibly just to be nice, maybe to take a cup of tea over, bowl of soup or some sugar or whatever. And the neighbor had no idea of what was going on, except that when Olga left, they were 100% better. They no longer had their illnesses, and they didn't know. It's over! I'm sick! I'm well now! How wonderful! And they didn't know that it was Olga's frame of mind, her presence, her attitude, that had brought this healing there. Now, each one of you have that same thing. Each one of you have the same ability to have the healing consciousness in you, if you wish it. And it takes my word, my inner word, is always changing in charming ways. Spiritual healers, by and large, make this statement, unfortunately. They say, "I can heal others, but I cannot heal myself or my family." Well, they can't heal others. Others heal themselves. And they can't heal themselves or their family because they don't believe in themselves. They don't believe in what they're doing. They just, like Olga Worrell, perhaps, going into the presence of someone who's ill and having them be ill, be sick, be well. Be ill, be sick. Having them not no longer be ill or sick, but be well. And that's what it's all about. You see, that's the frame of reference that we want to have. We want to have this healing consciousness. You see, that's what Jesus said to his disciples. "Look, you guys, you're doing it all wrong. You're doing it all wrong. I said, go out and heal and preach and teach and raise the dead and heal the sick. But no, you go out and say you can't do it. Now you go out and say, I can." Remember the little train going over the hilltop? Jesus said to his disciples, and they said, "Yeah, boss." And so he said, "Well, just like the little train, say, I think I can, I think I can, I think I know I can." And of course, they didn't have trains in Jesus' name, time, but I play games. So remember, if his disciples could do it, and were having such a hard time doing it because they felt that only Jesus could do it, you can do it. You can do anything. Put your heart to it. And Sylvia, you have the opportunity most of the time of talking to people on the phone who call in for healing treatment. You're the one who answers the phone the most. And when you do that, what do you say to people?
"It's done. Whatever they choose
to." Oh, so that's what she says. Ha, ha, ha. "It's done. You got your broken leg. It's done. You got your cancer. It's done. You got your dumb stuff."
No.
No. What is it done?
The solution. I always ask them for the solution. And then I say, "It's done now."
All right. That's what you must tell us, too. You must say, "I always ask them for the solution." People call up with problems. And you have the right and privilege to talk to most of them. And so as you talk to them, you say, "It is done." And they say, "I know it's done. I know I'm sick. I know I'm got the problem. Now help me, you know." And she said, "It's done." She said, "No, no, no." You ask them what the solution is. You see, you got to say all these things. You understand?
Yeah.
You cannot just go around half-cocked on this stuff. Because if you do, you're not going to get the benefit. So think about that. And as you think about that, think about it in a very positive way. Speak your word. Now, Sylvia, when they hang up, what is their condition?
They are, as they told me,
they're expressing their original purity and integrity. Mm-hmm. As they told you, they're expressing the fulfillment of whatever it is they chose. Do they ever call back and tell you it's done?
No.
Why not?
Because it's done and they don't know that it is ever different.
How interesting. Yeah. How powerful. How charming. I love you.
I love you too.
I love you.
I love you too.